Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Hello, everybody. Welcome aboard Friday. Yes, indeed. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Mr. Mayor, good morning. I am well. Hang on a second. Okay, now speak. There you go.
I'm well. I'm still the same.
You are
as well as I was when it wasn't working.
But you might not be so well after tomorrow night, because this could be the last day of your administration.
It is possible. There is somebody that thinks the world is going to end tomorrow. And we've heard this before in New York, that it's the end of the world, and we showed it wasn't true. This time, I assume, will not be any different. But, of course, if it does end tomorrow, how would you know?
Well, I
certainly couldn't tell you.
But aren't you going to tweet us on the information?
Well, I mean, you think about it. The world ended tomorrow, would fix our traffic problems.
It would.
But the world cannot end tomorrow. Do you know why?
Why?
It can't end until at least until the Knicks win a championship again.
Well,
so we got a long time to go.
Next one
like that, but it's sort of cute.
That's the overriding issue.
If the world ends tomorrow, I don't think you have to worry about returning library books,
mm-hmm.
parking tickets,
or anything.
I can just tell you this official policy. From the Sanitation Department and Department of Transportation.
You do have to push
it. No, if it does tomorrow, it does end tomorrow, alternate side parking will be suspended. Although I think alternate side parking will take on a whole different meaning, actually.
now, some people, according to the prediction, some people will be saved while the rest of us or some of us will be disappearing. Do you have a thought on where Michael Bloomberg
we're going to go? I think it depends on who you ask. You'll get a different set of views depending.
And I could actually come up with some of the names that might have.
Absolutely. But just in case.
Have you made plans?
I'm going to be in Oklahoma.
Okay.
I'm going to give a speech for a friend of mine, David Boren, out in Oklahoma for a group of 100 kids who got scholarships to go on to college. They are the 100 smartest kids in high school in Oklahoma or Oklahoma City. I think Oklahoma, the whole state. And
you're a brave man, considering after the snowstorm to be out of town when the world ends. You're going to get criticized in the newspapers.
I'm sure I am, but these kids did want some wonderful things. They're going to go on. I don't know if any of them are coming to school here. I hope they are. But I gave the commencement speech at the University of Oklahoma a few years ago. I think there were 60,000 people in the stands.
I thought Clinton did good. He'd had $30,000 for NYU this week when he gave $60,000.
Well, I don't know how many. I gave a commencement speech at NYU a few years ago.
That's the number I read. A lot of people.
Well, it must be right.
Must be right.
It's like the 2 million people we have in Times Square for New Year's Eve.
Exactly.
We must be right. Anyways, we are here just in case. These are the kind of things you can find out if you had the ability to get the numbers.
And how would you want to do that here in New York?
I would call Rachel Stern.
You've brought a friend of yours with you, Rachel Stern.
Absolutely.
New York City's chief digital officer.
Who knew?
Rachel,
good
morning.
We had a chief digital officer.
Right, I must admit, I did not
know. We announced it with great fanfare, did a press conference and everything else.
Rachel, are you the first digital officer?
I believe so.
Yeah.
It's a new role, although other countries have now started to implement it. Other cities are also doing the same.
And
we do it, everybody else does.
What is the goal here? What is the things have been talked about?
The goal is to use technology to serve New Yorkers better, make their lives easier, streamline things, and put more information at their fingertips.
And what sort of equipment do New Yorkers need to do this?
Well, we've got a range of equipment and tools already, which is great. So we've got NYC.gov, which we have over 2.8 million people are visiting already every year. We've got 200 social media channels. And what we're doing next is we're streamlining that further. We're going to introduce more smartphone apps, things like the 311 smartphone app. So you can just use your phone, take a picture of something.
And a pothole,
for instance, get your GPS location, and immediately you're done.
It automatically downloads right to the
It doesn't automatically fix the pothole, but at least it takes away one of our excuses.
or exactly, no more excuses that you didn't know about.
If you want to hold government accountable, first thing is you got to have good information that you can say, hey, you didn't do this. Government is responsive when people demand services and can prove, can show you that there's a benefit, and you know where they are, and if you don't provide them, they can tell people, and nobody likes to be criticized, particularly in government.
Wi-Fi is available all over New York City, but it isn't everywhere, is it? It's not ubiquitous, is it, Wi-Fi?
It's not yet, but there are a number of expansions that are happening soon, so that's showcased a little bit in the report, but absolutely, that was... We hear New Yorkers loud and clear. They're very interested in this, and it will be coming to more more public spaces.
What does it take to do Wi-Fi on the street, for example? Is that a practical idea?
Yeah, but it's very expensive, and Wi-Fi only goes a certain distance. And it was interesting this morning. I get some magazines on my iPad. And they come on Fridays, and so I tried to download one of them, and I put the iPad on the floor by the door to my bathroom so I wouldn't forget it, and I noticed it slowed down dramatically because it tells you you can see as it loads the percentage,
right.
And I picked it up a foot, and zoop. So, you know, it's basically the answer to your question is you have a fiber that brings the data from the net to a point, and then it's broadcast out. And
do you see the day when that is everywhere in New York or not really?
It's hard to believe that it isn't. If you think about it, we complain about a dead spot with Wi-Fi or your phone slows down or you drop a call. You know, 10 years ago, this stuff didn't exist at all.
Don't tell me 10 years ago. I want my phone call and I want it now.
That's exactly right. But the pace of change in technology is certainly not slowing down. If anything, it's going up. And the problem is it's hard to envision the things today from the perspective of the past, and for tomorrow, who knows what it's going to do.
Right. And from a planning purpose, that is very, very difficult to do. So I guess you just go with the flow, right, on a almost daily basis and hope you keep up with it.
Absolutely. And there's also a number of great initiatives, particularly these federally funded broadband initiatives called BTOP, that are going to be connecting 18,000 sixth graders, both in their homes and at school. So there's some great, great opportunities. And that's broadband in the home, that's training to use the technology. So there's a range of different infrastructure initiatives underway.
And the sixth grader that gets that today will be a senior, will be a college graduate.
Yeah, the real question
is... And things will be
is,
so much different
absolutely.
Then.
Absolutely.
But we're becoming the technology center. New York City is. Google's bought a block square building. Companies like Bloomberg and Facebook and Reuters and Twitter, everybody's building their staffs here. The real question is, with all this technology, is that what matters? Or it's, you know,
I thought it was the content that was the real.
Well, it's but it's being able to understand the content and use it. There's no point in having all the information in the world. If you want to write a paper for your class and all you do is you grab information from different places, you cut and paste and you produce this glossy report, right, with fancy pictures and all sorts of links and everything, so what? If you don't understand the context, you know, why was the war started and fought and who really won and what did we do and didn't we do and that sort of thing, or, you know, that speech, what's the importance of it? It's not just words. It was the context it was given. It was the way the words were put together. It was the presentation. And unfortunately, I've argued this for a long time, that you don't need to know much about technology. People like Rachel will figure out a ways where you just touch a button, or you don't even maybe have to touch the button, and she'll get you the information. What we have to do is teach our kids to read, to write, arithmetic, context, collaboration.
You cannot use a calculator if you don't know how to do math.
I still use my slide rule. I have one on my desk.
What?
A Cuffell and Esser log decitrig slide rule. Because slide rules let you see relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what you listen to sometimes, you say 98% of something is done. And you say it's virtually gone. And then somebody says, oh, and it's not gone. It's only 98%. In the context of, it's being able to put numbers in perspective. You know, if you think about it, mathematics is the most popular or most used language, not only in the world, in history. I mean, you don't do anything without mathematics, and it is a language. And unfortunately, we don't teach our kids how to understand the language. We may teach them some rules on how to put a sentence together, but not the context. And
all right, I want to know if I can get Rachel's. Can I get your email address so that when my computer locks up, I can call you and you
absolutely
can fix it for me?
Okay, but
no
keep
problem
in mind also, she's using a lot of these social networks which have been developed by others. New York City doesn't have to go build this. You can't keep up with technology. It's finding ways to use Facebook and Twitter and Foursquare, which is a company headquartered here in New York. And what information and how it's presented and how you find it, that's Rachel's specialty. And as she pointed out, once we did it here, you're right, other cities have started to do the same thing.
Well, see, it looks like you've got your work cut out for you, lots to do.
Absolutely, but there's an enormous moment. There's so much innovation happening. So that was one of the most exciting things in preparing this report and looking at the city, is you realize that in every single agency there are people who are, on top of all their other responsibilities, innovating, finding new ways to connect with constituents and share information.
The practical aspect of the digital age is fascinating to listen to. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
But they still listen to you talk.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. You and I have talked about this. That what I do here, and it is broadcast from a transmitter in New Jersey, could go on the internet. I don't need the transmitter any longer to do that.
But we still need you.
Correct.
And that's the difference.
Thank you.
Some people do. I listen all the time, and so does Rachel. But all kidding aside, how you're, and that's the same thing I've argued with newspapers. Newspaper is not cut down trees. A newspaper is the content and the layout and the selection and the presentation, and whether it gets to you electronically or hand delivered is relatively immaterial. Yes, people take a while to change and get used to something else, but you know, my kids read on the internet. I turn the pages of the paper every day. I carry them with me, and you know, but next generation doesn't do that. And you saw it in the paper today. Kindle has sold more books this year, electronic books, than paper books. And that's just the beginning.
And it's moving so rapidly. A year from now, it'll be, you know, three times as many
electronic books. Well, you see Borders and stores like that going out of business.
Yeah. No. Rachel, great to meet you.
Great to meet you. Thank you so much.
Good luck. Mr. Mayor, sit tight, if you would, please. And we'll be right back 20 minutes after 8 o'clock. Let me remind you that if you've got a question for the mayor, we've got some open lines, 800-321-0710. Get in line now, 800-321-0710. Twenty-five minutes after 8 o'clock, Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show on this Friday. Firehouses. Shelley Silver this morning coming in and beating up on you for closing the firehouse.
Well,
threatening to close the firehouse.
I didn't hear what the speaker said, but, you know, all of Albany, they're the ones that cut all our money. They cut $800 million out of our education funds. They cut 100% of revenue sharing, $300 million they did not send us. Every other county outside of New York, they cut 3%. We got cut 100%. So, you know, any layoffs we do have, any closings we do have, just turn to Albany. I mean, enough. The New York City taxpayer is paying more. We put $2 billion more into our education budget. And incidentally, let me just point out, regardless of where the money comes from, firefighting has changed over the last century. Today, buildings aren't made of wood generally. A lot of them have sprinklers, and they have, hopefully, they have smoke detectors and that sort of thing. And how many firehouses do you think we've closed in lower Manhattan below 14th Street since the 1940s? Would you guess?
I wouldn't have a clue.
Over almost 20. Mm-hmm. We've closed 20 firehouses every time people said the world was going to come to an end, and yet we're a heck of a lot safer today. If you go back to 2003, remember when we came into office and we had a big budget problem? We closed 6 fire companies. People said the world was going to come to an end, terrible things were going to happen. Today, response time to fires is a new low, and the number of fire deaths to new low. So the harder you work and you can innovate, you can find ways to do things. We just, our job is not to spend as much money as we can. It's to provide the services consistent with keeping the tax burden down on everybody. And we don't want people to leave the city. We want people to stay in this city. And if you make the tax burden too high or you make it unsafe, people will leave. We've shown that you can keep the tax burden down, or at least stop it from going up as much, and keep things safe. And people say, oh, well, there's more firehouses in Brooklyn this time. Look, firehouses were sited when the city's population was very different. It lived much closer in to, let's say, the East River, and today it lives much further, spread out over the whole city. Brooklyn has the fastest response times in the city, and even with the closes, we expect it still will have the fastest response times. But citing firehouses, because when they were in the days when they were pulled by horses or by men, is not what you want to do in this day and age. Things have to change. And I know people are afraid of change, and that, you know, a lot of this just gets ginned up by people pandering to small constituencies. But, you know, if people start realizing that's my money.
You see, I think most people, and this is true in the whole Albany game. This is true with Christie in New Jersey and Malloy up in Connecticut as well, and certainly Mr. Cuomo here in New York. But the people understand this. It's only those that are, as you say, you use the word pandering, or whether they're supporting a union, they're the ones that are making all of the noise. And we here in the media, we listen to them because that's the only people that are making the noise. And so therefore,
well,
that's the story you get.
I've said this for a long time. One of the big differences between the private sector and government, in the private sector, if you have a product line that's not working and a product line that is working, you move resources from the one that's not working over to the one that works. In government, you do it exactly the reverse. You take away monies from programs that really are efficient and provide a great service and send them over to programs that have just been demonstrated to not work. And, you know, it's like taking a bottle of milk that's sour and putting it back in the refrigerator and thinking it's going to come out fresh again. It doesn't happen.
And the people of New York City understand this, I think. The general population believes that we've got to make a change.
I have always been a very big believer in the public. You know, they have polls that'll say, we take a poll, you know, do you think the Yankees or the Mets are going to win this home series? This is the first of a series. This one's at Yankee Stadium. And it's whoever you want. That's fine. But there's no ways to prove it or anything. Whoever screams the loudest is going to get the most coverage, whichever one they can make the cutest joke about. That's what gets the headlines. And if you want to defend the media, you say the media gives the public what the public wants. And the public seems to buy more newspapers when there's scandal and that sort of thing. Somebody like this guy from the IMF, who I've never met, you know, he's all over biggest headlines you can do. That sells papers. Is that the most important thing going on in the world today? I don't think so. We have genocide. We have wars. We have big diplomatic issues. We have economic issues and health issues and all of those things. And, you know, they're buried in the paper if they're there at all.
Is the closing of these 20 firehouses fait accompli?
There's 6 weeks till we come up with a budget. And, you know, we're going to have to make some choices. And you keep looking. Number one, I can tell you our tax revenues are basically where we had projected them. Our expenses, we always think that you'll have some tort judgments against you and some extra expenses you didn't count on, and that's come through. So, you know, they're both up a touch, but essentially the same. And then we've got to sit down with the city council, it's a democracy, and figure out where we cut. But I can just tell you this, if you don't cut A, then B's going to get cut. And when people that said, don't cut A, when they realize their constituents care about B and maybe even care about B more, and they change overnight. So we'll see what happens. But the bottom line is we put away roughly $6 billion as a reserve in the years when things were good. And I thought this is crazy. These loans that people are making can't possibly get paid back. And the stock market was going up every day and all this. You know, no boom goes on forever. So we put $6 billion away. We are using four of it, two-thirds of it, to balance the budget this year. And we go into next year with a $5 billion deficit and with only a couple billion dollars to start the process of balancing it. So next year is going to make this year look like it was easy, unless the economy really improves. And nobody projects the economy going that well. New York City's doing well. Our unemployment rate, I think, is 8.6. More importantly, private sector job creation is going up, because unemployment rate's a telephone survey, and it tends actually to go up when the economy improves, at least at the beginning, because more people want to go into the workforce, so they say they're unemployed, whereas if you call and say, are you looking for a job, they say no. Why? Because they're just dispirited and drop out. But the private sector job creation is encouraging. For the whole country, it's growing, but not at a... It's not going to cover up the ball for sure.
Slowest recovery from a recession.
Yeah, and if you were to, for example, have a downturn in the Chinese economy, that would be a very bad thing for America, because not only do we buy a lot of stuff from there, but we sell a lot of stuff there. And if their economy slows down, you can see them reducing prices and working even harder to reduce that. That maybe helps us get cheap products, but it doesn't help competition with America. And in terms of them buying our stuff, we're going to be priced out of the market. So there's a lot of things in the world that could go wrong. Having said that, there's a lot of things that go right, and there's always problems on both sides. So I'm long-term optimistic, and I'm more optimistic for New York than any place else. But we've got to do something, as you and I were talking about earlier, with the big cities that have been hollowed out by these industries. New York's replaced those industries with tourism and some other things, IT and biotech.
Yeah.
But this country has got to focus on the economy. Congress just cannot go here and just keep no, no, no to everything. The Democrats don't want any cuts. Republicans don't want any revenue enhancements. And yet the only way you're ever going to balance the budget is with some of both. And everybody says, yes, I understand that. But when it comes down to
ideology,
it's just that you can't, to not raise the debt ceiling would be disastrous. I mean, Jamie Dimon, I heard on the radio this morning, said, you know, be worse than the subprime crisis. And we can't do that. And I think everybody understands that. But you play chicken, and at the last minute, you waited too long before you turned away, and the crash is pretty severe.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on a Friday here. We've gone a little long. Let me get to Joe Bartlett. We'll be back again, 800-321-0710, with your calls in a little while. We roll on with the mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, here on the John Gambling Show. Let me see here. Five. We've got one line open, 800-321-0710, if you want to see if you can jump on that, if you've got a question. I said it earlier this week, and I'll repeat it again. The story about the UFT sending out the lawyers to block the city from closing 22 schools that are failing miserably, that don't graduate 50% of the people that go there, is unconscionable. And I get so tired of listening every time there is an attempt by someone to fix a school here in New York City. The first action of the UFT is to march the lawyers out.
Well, you have a bunch of schools here where, I don't know, 12, 15%, something like that, of the kids are up to snuff in English, and same
85% or not.
Right, and roughly the same percent in math and the graduation rates. And we've tried everything, interventions, more money, changing staff, all of that stuff. And I think even as disappointing is the NAACP joined into the suit. You know, they should know better. We're trying to make the schools better. If you take a look, there's just too many kids, particularly minority kids, who test poorly. You can argue about why, but there's no question about it. And to sit here and to let that go on, which is exactly what they're trying to do, is just unconscionable. You cannot throw more money at. Number one, we're going to have more money, and the public's not going to come up with more money, so that's a pipe dream. Number two, to just sit there and give up. Or deliberately say, look, to protect the jobs of a handful of people, or to keep people from having to
sacrifice the kids.
That's the whole thing. Our school system has to be run for the kids. And instead, the objective of all these lawsuits is to run them for the people that work in the system. I love the people that work in the system. We want to have the best teachers. We want to have them as well paid as we possibly can. But when it's not working, you have to do something. And somebody said to me, oh, well, you know, what would happen if the principal can fire me if they just don't like it? John, what do you do if your boss here doesn't like you? You're out.
You're done. Right.
I mean, the rest of us work in a world where you know, part of the job is to get along in an organization and to explain to your boss why you're doing a good job and to convince her or him.
Why I'm worth the salary
and
the job.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, that's the real world. They don't want anything like that. And these lawsuits, you know, Albany wrote a law that makes it, has so many tweaks in it that it's really hard to comply with everything. They make it so complex so that you can always go to court. And look, you can say, let's assume we want to serve pineapple rather than peaches and for dessert. There's an allegation that pineapple has a spell differently than peaches, and PI word versus PE word could have a detrimental effect on the child's education and their ability to get a job and share in the great American dream. And so we're going to go to court. And then the judge says, well, I don't know, we'll have to have testimony. And then you go on. And to do these lawsuits right now when parents are trying to figure out where the kids are going, this is so disruptive. Hopefully the courts will stop this. But somebody's just got to – these organizations have to stop this. It cannot go on this way. These are our kids. And at some point, the public's going to really rile. If you see in Massachusetts and Illinois, people talk about Wisconsin going against some of the pension abuses. Massachusetts and Illinois, two overwhelmingly Democratic states, have passed in at least one house in both cases legislation cutting back benefits. I don't happen to think we should. I've written this again and again. I think our unions, on balance, are responsible, and while their job's to get the best for their members, not to take care of anything else. That's the government's job. We've given them benefits we can't afford. Okay, we can work that out. You can work it out at the bargaining table. But this constant stopping of trying to improve and the constant defense of when the results clearly show it's not working.
I don't understand why parents in those communities continue to either support or be quiet.
Well, number one, parents are moving into the city. When people vote with their feet, all this stuff that we haven't made the school system better, you ask parents, they want to come here. And number two, unfortunately, there are some parents who just come from, you know, they never had a formal education, and they don't understand the value of education. And many of our kids come from families, you know, the old Norman Rockwell family's gone. Some of these kids don't have parents, and there's nobody to stand up for them. And some people, one woman said to me, you know, her kid goes to a great school. I said, how do you know? The teacher told me. I said, but you just told me the child's not learning how to read. Oh, yeah, but it's still a great school. Well, the objective of school is not to be great. It's to produce great results. And it's just, it's a constant battle. Having said that, as President Obama and his Education Secretary Arne Duncan said, we are the role model for what to do with an inner-city school system. We have made enormous progress in the last 10 years and or 9.5 years, and we're going to keep doing it, and it's going to get better, but it sure makes it harder. What's more, those kids who don't get a better education while you're in court never catch up. That's just the real world.
There was a story that the DOE is going to hire 500 new teachers when you're potentially going to lay off 6,000.
Because it's special ed teachers with special skills that you have to. We even hire recruiters to help get them. The law says we have to have them. So some of these people, like in Albany, if they complain about it, they pass laws saying we have to have it, which probably laws that I agree with. But that's why you do it. And it's, you know, one teacher, it'd be great if you can train them for something else, but a lot you can't. And so the fact that you are cutting in one place doesn't mean you can cut in another. Next year, our school system, with doing nothing else in terms of raises or anything else, will cost us roughly $500 million more. And most of that is in mandates for special ed and other things, mandates from the state and federal government. And federal government cut us $850 million in education funds. State cut us $800 million in education funds, plus other monies that we could have moved over there from the state. And I understand they've got their budget problems. I've, you know, worked with the governor. And what I've always said is it should be a fair cut, and it's not. And this is, even if this is the best, if it's fair, even then it hurts, and we're just going to have to find ways to do more with less.
All right, The governor has made some suggestions on pension reform. Tier 6 is being talked about up there.
Yeah, for us it'd be a tier 5.
It'll be a tier 5. Is it included in that potential bill, that giving the city the right to negotiate pensions with its
I don't think the governor wanted to put that in there. It's creating whatever he's doing for the state. He has assured us, was with him the other day, that the equivalent would be in the city. There's some minor tweaking in the language, but all be part of the same bill. Keep in mind, we don't vote these benefits. It's Albany that votes them. We just pay for them. So Albany has to fix that problem. We cannot do that on our own. And, you know, sometimes they do these things and they say, well, we'll give you the right to do it, but you got to negotiate with the unions. That's like some of these measurements of teachers. We had all this for Race to the Top. And they came to this great agreement that we judge teachers. But nothing goes in until you negotiate an agreement with the union to do it. Well, the union's says, oh, we'll do that only if we get a big contract. We don't have money for a big contract. That's a non-starter. Let's get serious here. We're trying desperately to keep as many teachers working as we can and help the kids as much as we can. Certainly don't have more money. And our education spending has gone up in 10 years or 9.5 years. It has gone up 105%. What would you guess all the other agencies have gone up on average?
I wouldn't know.
28%. But education, 105%. And inflation's 33%. So for all these agencies, our increases are less than inflation, except for education. And the other big expense, pensions. What percentage do you think pensions have gone up in?
Well, you tell us week after week that it's gone up to $8.5
billion. 515%, something like that.
Exactly. So, all right, Mr. Mayor, we've got some people waiting on the phone here. We will get to them in just a moment. Have any tweets? You bringing tweets with you this week?
Absolutely. Okay, are you kidding me? After we had Rachel here?
You got tweets.
I got tweets.
Mayor's got tweets, and we'll listen to those in just a bit. 11 now before 9 o'clock, coming right back.
News Talk Radio 710 WOR. The John Gambling Show.
7 now before 9 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Mr. Mayor, grab your headset and we'll...
Yeah, you know, John, we're just talking about the economy, and you said advertising slowed down, and I was at a restaurant the other night, and the guy said to me, I said, how's your business? And he said it was great, and then about, you know, a month ago started slowing down. So, you know, even here in the city, the economy in the country is, we were talking
about... fragile.
It's fragile, and it's spotty, and it's up and down, but it's not running away on the upside.
No, not at all. All right, let's go to the phones here. We're going to start with line one, which is a good place to start. I've got a rabbi, Rabbi Hadler. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. This is Rabbi Hadler of Borough Park. We have a terribly dangerous situation here in Borough Park. The Department of Transportation, under the Safe Streets to Seniors program, created a serious, dangerous situation on Fort Hamilton Parkway, right next to the emergency room of Maimonides Hospital. They tried to make the place safer, but they took a street that's only 50 foot wide and put in an 8 foot median, which is blocking the bypass lanes that all the emergency vehicles.
Where is this, Rabbi?
It's on Fort Hamilton Parkway, from running from 44th Street to 47th Street. They put medians in all those three streets and block the bypass lanes.
Stay on the line. We'll get your phone number. I'm going to be at, I think, 92nd Street and Fort Hamilton Parkway in a couple of hours, but I'll drive down and take a look there, and we'll get back to you. I'll have somebody from the Department of Transportation.
Call service, Rabbi.
Well, you know, he calls, and maybe we can do something, and seems like a nice guy. Why not, you know? I don't know what we're going to change, but we'll explain to him what we did, and if he can convince him that we made a mistake, you can always change, you know?
There you go. Absolutely.
Anyways, thanks for the call.
All right. Let us go to Jerry. Jerry in Jackson Heights. Good morning, Jerry. You got the mayor.
Oh, good morning,
Hi.
Mayor. Just to show you how broken the pension system is, we have these politicians going to jail and still collect their pensions, and the number one auditor in the state of New York doesn't get any pension. It shows you how broken the system is.
Well, you know, these pension laws were written over long periods of time. Every time another bill comes up, somebody else asks for something, and unfortunately, sometimes they get things that, in retrospect, we couldn't afford or weren't right. The issue of whether you go to jail and should be able to keep your pension is obviously one that almost everybody, not everybody, but almost everybody thinks you should not get your pension, but it's in the law, and getting the Albany legislature to change it it ain't easy is a nice way to phrase it.
Let me ask you a question that I didn't before. Gay marriage, you were in Albany.
Yep.
Why?
I believe it's not the government's business who you can marry. I just don't think it's, I think every religion has a right to set their own policies of what they recognize and what customs and ceremonies and agreements they want to make. That's in the world of religion, but the state government should not tell you who you can and who you can't marry. And I think from an equity point of view, the state should change the law. And I've always believed that it's not in favor or against. It's the fact that it's not the government's business, to me, is the real deciding thing here.
What was your takeaway?
You never know. I mean, what I did say was that the state should bring this up for a vote, and people in the legislature, senators, and assembly people should on the record vote yes or no, up or down, so that people know where they say, because otherwise they can say one thing to one group and another thing to another group, and whether or not it passes or not, I don't know. And different people can have different views, but having views and not being willing to stand up, it's like these quotes in the papers, an unnamed source said, I've never liked that. If you believe something, say it.
Couldn't agree with you more. You got some tweets in front of you there?
We do. How did you know? After Rachel Stern, we had to have tweets.
You have to have tweets.
Okay, first tweet is, how about the ability to prepay a cab with a smartphone app? Well, you can't do that quite yet, but you can prepay. You can pay your cab with a credit card now. All the cabs have those, and I'm told that they are used all the time. And the reason the cab drivers like them is people tend to give bigger tips when they just have to write out the number or touch a button than when they have to reach into their pocket. So they round up rather than round
down.
Your
smartphone, however, very shortly is going to be your credit card.
Absolutely. You're just going to wave it at something. And, you know, listen, lots of people, lots of companies have cards that you carry around your neck or in your wallet that when you go by, they check you in, check you out, check to make sure you're working there. In Europe, ski lifts, a lot of places, every ski lift is owned by a different family, and you buy one ticket at the bottom of the hill. So how do they split it up? Because you put up something in your pocket. You don't even take it out. As you go through the line, it reads it. And
it's
then
an easy pass.
It's exactly right. And we are so far behind. They've been doing this for 20 years in Europe. And we just get easy pass. And in all fairness, also, Jay Wald is trying to bring in a whole bunch of new technology where you don't have to slow down, and it does a variety of different things. Another tweet here talking about the MTA. Somebody tweeted, will the MTA restore cut bus service? And if the MTA can buy new buses, why don't they bring back the bus lines that were cut? The expenses, one's a capital expense, the other is the operating cost. The MTA has been defunded by Albany. The Albany controls when they can raise fares, and Albany redistributes money from the taxpayers. And, you know, somebody had an idea a long time ago. Why don't you charge people to come across the bridges into Manhattan, which would get more of them to use mass transit, and take that money and improve mass transit?
Who came up with that?
I have no idea, but Albany said they had a better idea. And they had a different idea. They have this commuter tax thing, which is not popular in a lot of places. I think the congestion pricing one made a lot more sense. But, you know, Albany's got to fix this. I'm tired of the people that work for the MTA from top to bottom. Not all of them, but virtually all of them really do a good job. And I take the subway almost every day, and I can just tell you, it works. And the people that work there are pleasant, and, you know, we chit-chat.
Isn't it just a matter of time that we're going to see congestion pricing or some form of it?
Well, Albany's going to have to deal with the fact that eventually the buses and the subways are going to just stop working if you don't give them enough money. Our safety is jeopardized. They become less attractive because they can clean less, and they run less rapidly, and they run less frequently unless they have the money. So, you know, let's not complain about closing firehouses when you cut money for the city. Let's not complain about the MTA when you cut money for the MTA.
Mr. Mayor, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Next weekend.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. We will be here next Friday unless...
And the end of the world comes
Saturday night. We'll have to wait and see. 9:00 in the morning. More to come.